to the European Tour Race 2 Dubai show today. We look back at Lucas Herbert's win in Dubai as Australians attempt to dominate world golf. We talk Bryson's mind, body and swing, Bezuidenhout's untimely bogey, Emirates evolution, Rory and Rambo's near miss, preview the action in Saudi and hope to get it all done quicker than a Sebastian Soderberg round in the desert. You're with Dan Roebuck and my guest today, former European Tour pro James Heath, who's making his debut on the show. So as you do, you look up your guests to see exactly who you might be dealing with, what you might be dealing with. And the first thing that you come up with when you Google James is footage of him playing in his underpants on the European Tour in Morocco a couple of years ago. James, how are you?
Yeah, no, very good. I'm pleased you only found that stuff.
Oh, really? Got the pants on today?
Yeah, got pants on today and trousers.
Just tell everyone very briefly what happened in Morocco.
Well, it was just a natural shot selection, really, you know, just trying to bleed everything out of the round I can and save myself a shot.
Save yourself a washing bill?
Exactly.
Fantastic.
There you go. Yeah, got to save the pennies.
Excellent. Also today on the show, we've got golf journalist Michael McEwen. And Michael is on Skype today, so I've no idea if he's got his pants on or indeed anything. Michael, how are you?
Good morning, Dan. How's it going? I can assure you I am fully dressed.
Okay, because I don't want to really get into the what are you wearing down a phone line at this time in the morning, so thankfully. You're in your boardroom, you were telling us earlier, all sort of wooden panels and nice sort of whiskies on the sideboard, mantelpiece and so on.
Yeah, I'm looking at the whiskey just now, actually. It's tempting me. The sun isn't over the yard yet, so I think it would be completely inappropriate for me to dig in at this moment in time, but we'll see how we get on. It depends how this conversation goes, to be honest, whether I get stuck in or not.
Well, Lucas Herbert, we know, got stuck in last night because he won the Omega Dubai Desert Classic out at the Emirates Golf Club. He actually tweeted, didn't he, saying that he might need advice on how to deal with a hangover from Lee Westwood. It was an incredible win, really. The day itself, I thought, the final day, James, in Dubai was odd because conditions were always going to change and the wind got up. We had a bit of a sandstorm almost, and it was always going to be set up, you felt, for someone to post a score. And for a long time, that looked like it was going to be Christian Bezuidenhout.
Yeah, you got bang on. It was. I think everybody knew it was going to be a tough day as well. 75 was the average round yesterday. So, yeah, guys coming out of the pack and posting a score. And in the last few groups, I think, apart from maybe Tom Lewis, who finished third, I think. And I think it did get a bit easier at the end, didn't it? The wind died down a little bit. But even then, the guys weren't really capitalising. I think they left themselves too much to do.
Bezuidenhout looked like he was going to win, Michael. And then he stepped on the 18th tee in the par 5 and the second shot, unfortunately for him, found water and he posted a 6. I mean, he must have felt that he was in his grasp at that stage.
Yeah, you know, I think that the thing with Christian Bezuidenhout is that he's quite an unflappable character. You don't see him make many mistakes on the course, and the one that he made on 18 was just so uncharacteristic for him. He's probably replayed that shot several times over in his mind ever since, but I thought it was quite gutsy to then get up and to salvage a bogey. It was actually a pretty good bogey that he made under the circumstances. It put a little bit of pressure on the people behind him. I thought 9-under was going to be a really good target to set, and so it proved. So, yeah, he'll be disappointed, but I'm sure, you know, he's got to just take the positives. Horrible cliche, though, it is, but accentuate those and just use it as part of the learning curve he's got going forward.
From Lucas Herbert's point of view, and we'll speak to Lucas very shortly, James, he birdies the last two. Do you think he didn't really have that sort of winning mindset, if you like, and he was playing with a bit of freedom over the final 5 or 6 holes?
Yeah. Was it 68 yesterday, shot?
Yeah.
One of the best rounds of the day.
Same as Bezuidenhout,
yeah,
in the
exactly.
end.
Yeah, exactly. And he obviously had the firepower to hit the last green in two. So he had I think he two-putted from about 65 feet on the last. Yeah, I think he knew it was important and he delivered.
Yeah, just briefly on the playoff as well, it was almost what it was, roles reversed, wasn't it, James, when it came to the first playoff hole because Lucas looked like he'd given it away.
Well, I just want to touch on a point that Mike just said, actually, you know, like Christian wedged in the water. Yeah, caught it a little bit low on the face, what he said, and it came up short. But what was so impressive, and I actually played with Christian back in Qatar in 2018, and what was impressive about him was his unflappable character. And as actually Lucas touched on it in his interview, he just said, look, you know, you don't always hit great shots. So it's cliche, but golf is not a game perfect. So Christian didn't hit a good shot. But what was so impressive, wedged that up there, hold that 20-footer, and it's like, that's golf. You are not going to play golf, perfect golf, all the time. So I thought that was super impressive from Christian. And Lucas to hit what was the worst shot, I think he called it.
I mean, it was nowhere near, was it? It was nowhere near.
I think Jamie Spencer was commentating and he literally said, this is so far right. And it was like, and it was, but he just hit an awesome wedge shot to a foot and then suddenly put the pressure back on Christian because suddenly he's now got a like two putt from 30 feet down the hill.
I always quite like playoffs. I'm sure it's horrible for the players themselves, but I love the match play element that comes into it. You know, you are essentially still playing a stroke play tournament, but you know, it's a mini match play for me, and you see the psychology and the pressure really at its highest. And yeah, it was fascinating to watch and delighted for Lucas because, I mean, you know, I think that he's the sort of player that thrives in having confidence, and that'll only serve him well in the weeks and months ahead. So I know it's tempting when a player wins to say, yeah, he's going to go on and win many more times. And I'm sure Lucas will over his career. But this year, don't be surprised if he's in the top 10 of the Race Dubai at the end of it. And if he hasn't, maybe added another couple of titles.
Well, I'm pleased to say that Lucas Herbert joins us now, live from the Gulf, to look back on what was an incredible win. Lucas, incredible final day. We were watching it back in the UK here. And for a long time, it looked like Christian Bezuidenhout was going to get the job done posting a score. But you came late on the rails, birdieing 17 and 18. The first question I've got for you is, when did you think you were in the mix to win this tournament?
Probably when I hit it on the green on 18 and I actually saw the scores, because, I mean, all day I'd kept an eye on the leaderboard just, you know, to see where I was position-wise and obviously try and get myself up into that top 10 or top 5. And I'd seen that Christian was the group in front of me, so I'd seen him, obviously his name had popped up there through maybe 11 holes, and then, you know, just kept on kind of going up. He was making a fair few birdies on that back nine and playing really nicely, and, you know, the weather wasn't really helping us out, so it was a pretty good score he had going. And then, so I knew he was 10 under playing the last, and then when we were walking from the 17th green to the 18th tee, we kind of heard a roar from the 18th green, like, you know, someone had made a putt, and we all just, me and my caddy sort of thought, well, that's, you know, Christian's just made birdie, he's won the tournament, you know, we're playing for second or third, you know. So, you know, I hit a good drive, hit my second on the green, and then we looked at there was a screen on the right side of the 18th there, and it flashed up at 9 under for his score, and we were kind of a bit perplexed because, you know, we obviously thought he'd made birdie to go to 11. So it wasn't until then that I was like, oh, wow, well, you know, if I two-putt this and get to 9, we're in the clubhouse lead. It's not easy out here. Guys are still going to make up some shots. And, you know, it's not easy just to hold ground, let alone make them up. So, yeah, that was about the first time that I thought I was a chance to win it.
So does it go from no pressure at all to an awful lot of pressure very quickly?
I don't know about pressure, but the nerves and the adrenaline definitely get going. I mean, walking up 18, I kind of thought to myself, like, you know, I might only get to do this like two or three times this year, you know, being that really, you know, riding contention. And, you know, these are the kind of the moments that, you know, you look forward to every year. You don't get many of them. And like, I just wanted to enjoy it. Just wanted to like take it all in and try and...
And yeah, sorry to interrupt you. And you were like consciously thinking about that, like walking up to the green.
When I was walking off the tee, yeah. I actually kind of had that thought. I was like, oh, you know, wow, I don't really get this that often. So, that's, you know, awesome. Let's just enjoy this.
Yeah.
You know, it's good fun. So, yeah.
How pleased were you when you hit that 60-footer to like 6 inches?
Yeah, I was pretty happy with that. to be fair, like my speed control and my putting all week had been decent. And for probably like 6 to 12 months now, it's been really good. So I think it was 69 feet. My caddy paced it off and I was never really too concerned about three putting, if I'm honest. So when we were playing the ninth, obviously the greens are joined, and there's a guy, I'm not sure who it was, but there's a guy coming up 18, and he basically hit his shot to where my ball ended up 9 holes later. So, and I was standing on the ninth green, I actually kind of got a read of his putt because I've watched him hit it and didn't think a lot of it because I didn't think I was going to hit it 70 feet right of that hole, but I had kind of seen it already, and I'd hit a similar putt the year before, so I had a bit of a read, and I kind of knew, I thought I had a bit of an idea what was going on, and it actually probably 20 feet out, it probably looked like it was more of a chance of going in.
Well, mate, it was an awesome putt under that sort of pressure.
Obviously, you know, it's been a bit of a good streak for Australian golfers recently. You know, you guys, with yourself and Mark Leishman winning yesterday, which I think we were saying it's the first time since 2002 there's been Australians won on the European Tour and PGA Tour on the same weekend. But conscious, obviously, of the bushfires back home, and I think we've all seen and been affected and quite moved by what's happened there. I'm curious, are you Australian guys that are out there knowing how, you know, Australians being sports mad, are you feeling a certain kind of pressure or obligation to step up and give your country something to smile about amidst all this?
I wouldn't have put it like that, I guess. I mean, it's really hard. Like, I mean, I still live in Australia, so I potentially have the, you know, the ability to go and try and help out a little bit more than someone like Mark can or Adam Scott can, without sort of donating quite a bit of money. So we kind of feel a little bit helpless in a way. Like, about the best thing we can do is try and provide some entertainment and you know, bring some joy and, you know, try and I guess entertain people who are going through those tough times. And yeah, it's always good when we play well to try and do that, to try and provide everyone back home with some joy and that kind of thing. But I wouldn't say it's extra pressure. You know, we're going out there every week trying to do our best for us anyway. So I think we're probably all our own harshest critics.
Well, you've done your country proud, as have all the Australian golfers who have been winning seemingly every single week over the last 4 or 5 weeks or so. You personally didn't do yourself particularly proud when you found water on the first playoff hole. Do you think that was it when you found water with your second shot in the first playoff hole?
Yeah, I sort of didn't
Or do you think there's always a chance? There's always a chance, isn't there, with that hole, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, your thoughts are definitely going towards, well, you know, that's that one done after you hit that sort of second shot, and you're kind of worried about where the video of that's going to end up, because it was a pretty horrific shot. Actually,
the wind got up.
Yeah, I got a little photo of it, like, off the video this morning, and kind of, like, drew some lines on it to the boys just to be like, okay, this is where I was trying to hit it, and this is where it went, and, like, just for everyone to understand, like, how far right it was, because I think watching it on TV with no shot tracer, it actually doesn't look as bad as probably what it was. But, yeah, like, once I went to the drop zone, I mean, it was an area of my game that I've worked on pretty hard in the last few months and tried to get the most improvement out of, because, you know, I felt like I was pretty long off the tee and just wasn't, you know, using the advantage there, because I just couldn't get it anywhere near the hole from inside 100. So, to go through with that pitch shot and hit one when I really needed it with some stuff that we worked on recently was pretty satisfying. Christian hit it to, you know, 30, 35 feet long left of that hole, and that's not an easy putt. As much as that was kind of the safe play at the time, like, that putt kind of goes over a ridge, and if it gets going at all, I mean, he hit a great putt. That thing was barely moving when it went past the hole, and it still got 4 feet by. So I thought even with a bogey, I might have had a chance to send it down another hole. So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a great shot, and obviously didn't have a lot of great thoughts walking off from it, but it didn't feel like everything was over, I guess, with that one bad ball.
Something you said in the interview afterwards, which can massively relate to, is like, yeah, I think it's your psychologist mentioned it, saying, like, not everybody hits perfect shots, right? And it was just so impressive how you were just like, all right, rubber shot away, but let's just knuckle down. You were able to hit that pitch shot in there and put the pressure on Christian, mate. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
Got one quick question for you, because we played together in September, and I hope you haven't spent that 80 quid or whatever, because we'll play again soon. But I literally went back to all my buddies. I was like, this kid's awesome. Genuinely, you were proper impressive. And then, keeping up for your results, secured your card in there. But then I heard, like, you went a bit off, you know, as in, like, you weren't really feeling golf that much. I think I saw something that Beef said.
Yeah.
What was going on, if you don't mind me asking? Like, what was the crack? What, just not feeling golf? Any reasons, or...?
Yeah, I mean, I was probably somewhat going through it at the time that we played together, to be honest. It had fueled from last year, and, you know, the start of the year, that was the first year I'd played away on tour, and I had a girlfriend back home who was not able to travel much with the job she had, and obviously my job's pretty flexible. I mean, there's no required amount for me to play, so in a way you kind of feel like, well, like, why do I have to be here this week? Why couldn't I just be at home, you know, hanging out with her or hanging out with my friends, or, you know, just do it, like, doing what I like doing back home kind of thing. So that probably didn't help. And then sort of a little bit of instability with the people around me as to, like, you know, who was kind of there. We just went through a lot of changes with my team and felt like I was working really hard and not getting any result from it. I guess golf wasn't necessarily what was making me upset. It was just the fact that golf was taking me all these places that I didn't want to go, and I wasn't enjoying much of my life anymore. I felt like I was letting people down around me if I went and enjoyed my life, you know, whether it be go and have a couple of beers at night time, or, you know, just go and enjoy yourself when you're out the road, go sightseeing rather than go to the range and practice. But
yeah,
some, like, you know, that kind of felt like, oh, well, I've got, you know, people sacrificing all their time and trying to help me out, and I, you know, I'm not interested in, you know, doing what they want me to do. It was just, there was a lot of pressures on me and around me that I felt like I just didn't know how to deal with. So basically, as soon as I wrapped up my tour card last year, I was like, right, I'm out of here. Like, I just want to go home and spend some time at home and pretty much not play golf until I want to go and play a golf tournament again.
Sure.
So yeah, when I got home, I actually didn't know how long I was going to have off. And then, funnily enough, I was sort of playing with some friends about a week after I got home, and I hurt my hand. I did a ligament in my hand, and I couldn't play for 6 weeks. I played the Australian Open, having not touched a club for 6 weeks prior. I think taking me away from golf, and not giving me the option of being able to play, like, that turned things around. And, you know, putting in better structures this year, my schedule's better, so I'm not away as long. And a lot of these changes have, like, really helped me. Like, I'm enjoying the game again. You know,
that's great to hear, mate. That really is
ago,
great to hear.
12 months ago, if I had a one yesterday, I would have been like, all right, get me home. I just want to go home and celebrate with my friends. But, like, you know, 12 months later, I'm kind of like, well, I actually want to go and play next week. You know, we're playing good. Let's go and capitalize on the good form in Saudi.
Mate, that's really good to hear. Yeah, and now Dubai Desert Classic champions. So, and genuinely, mate, you're the one of the best players I think I've actually played with. So, looking forward to watching your career. But don't spend that £8, right?
I do think you got me on a good day that day when we played, because I think I might have had you guys in trouble through that front nine.
Yeah, nine under, and I think you missed a few tap-ins as well.
So, I promise I'm not usually that good.
All right, mate. Best of luck next week.
Thank you, guys.
Lucas, you mentioned on the TV yesterday when you were speaking after the round that you were asked what you think you're capable of, and you said a hangover tomorrow, presumably. So two questions. One, did that hangover happen? And two, what are we looking for the future for you now, both short-term and long-term?
Well, to be fair, I think when I woke up, I was still drunk, so I kind of missed the hangover phase. But I had some really nice bottles of water today, which kind of rehydrated me a little bit. I got a whoop, and my recovery was 15% this morning, so that was pretty enjoyable. That's the first question. I mean, I don't really know where to put my expectations this year. It was so funny. Like, about like a week ago, obviously played Abu Dhabi and was got a top 20 going to the weekend and backed it out to like 66, I think, by Sunday. And it felt like I'd done that quite a few times over the last 12 months. And getting really frustrating. Felt like, you know, it just always felt like I was going to turn up to the golf course and it was like, oh, how's this going to go wrong today? What are we going to do that's going to get me in trouble here? So, and it was like I was trying to go and win a golf tournament to sort of solve all the problems that I had within my own head. Came into this week and like basically changed all the goals and went, let's just try and make this up 40. You know, let's not even worry about trying to finish fifth or seventh or whatever. Let's just try and make the top 40. And, you know, like change all these goals around. And then all of a sudden, what I'd been trying to do for a year all of a sudden just happened without me trying to do it. So I guess my kind of take from that is like maybe I shouldn't set too many lofty goals and just, you know, like focus on the smaller ones, ticking off a few boxes here and there and hopefully kind of fall into some better results and some results like I had yesterday.
Well, it certainly clicked yesterday in Dubai. Congratulations once again on Australia Day also. And I know because of the wonders of technology, you're actually paying for this call and it's around about $5 a minute. So we will let you go. Good luck in Saudi this week. Good luck for the rest of the season. Thanks for taking time out to speak to us on the European Tour Race to Dubai show. Lucas, many congratulations. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate having me on.
Well, incredibly, both Christian and Lucas started 6 shots off the lead. When you're that far off the pace, do you think you've got a chance to win? Do you look at the conditions and think, well, I've got to go out there and post a score. If I can get round quickly, we'll talk more about quick rounds a little bit later on in the show, but if I can post a score, I could still be in with a chance, because everybody knew what the weather was going to be like. Ewan Murray of Sky Sports suggested that this is going to be a tough day today. He was on the course early. He knew what the wind was like. He knew it wasn't really going to die down for much of the day. So as a player, even though you're 6 off the pace, what's your mindset going into the last day?
Depends what sort of place you're in, really. I mean, if your game's in decent shape, and your mind's in decent shape, you're just trying to shoot the best score you can. And regardless of whatever situation that is.
But do you think you'll back in it a little bit because of the conditions?
Yeah, definitely. It's the sort of thing, isn't it? You're 300 through 5 and you're like, okay, let's go.
There's a lot to be said for being in the maybe the 6th or 7th last group when conditions are like that. I think back to Paul Laurie when he won the Open at Carnoustie. That was the extreme circumstance there. He started the day 10 shots back and, you know, ended it with the claret jug strapped in the seatbelt of his Subaru as he drove back home. So I think there's a lot to be said for being the person who can go out and just try and put a little bit of pressure on, maybe rein in the leaders before they've even finished their breakfast so that they're going onto the course with a different mindset, knowing that they really have to make zero mistakes.
Do you think that Christian got a little bit complacent on that final hold in regulation, Michael? What are your thoughts? I mean, he, it's a bogey on a par five, and everybody's either parring or birding. Is it just like, crikey, I'm so close to the clubhouse here, I know I've got a good score? Does his mind just switch off a little?
He'd been playing quite aggressively the whole way around, and he probably at that point just didn't want to change anything. You know, he is a focused guy. He would have known where he was in the tournament, I'm quite sure. And at that point, just keep the foot down. Don't change what I've been doing. Like, it was a bad shot. It was a bad decision. It's tricky. He'll be looking back and he'll probably be thinking about the contact of that shot and was it the right decision? I think in these situations, you're better not to second guess yourself too much. Just accept that you had a strategy, you had a game plan, you stuck to it. Didn't all fall in your favour, but everything else that you could have done under your control, you did to the best of your abilities.
Just seconds for the South African. It was Lucas Herbert, who, of course, won on Australia Day, up to second position in the Race 2 Dubai rankings, up to 79th in the world rankings from 223rd. Some really good stories coming out of Dubai over the course of the last week. Adrian Aus was third alongside Tom Lewis and Dean Burmester. Dean Burmester, James, involved in this car crash with his family on the Wednesday ahead of the tournament. Looking at some of the pictures, he was in a cab, wasn't he? And it looked horrendous. I mean, he said that he put golf in perspective and he played brilliantly over the course of the next 4 days.
Yeah, right. I mean, it was pretty full on. I saw the picture. I mean, that was a proper crash. And I think he said, look, I've been stressing about this game. And actually, like, something bad could have happened today. He's a quality player, Dean Burmester. Fully expect him to win sometime soon.
Two shots out of the playoff in the end for Dean on 7 under par, one ahead of Ashin Wu, who was our third round leader. Shot a 67, excuse me, to take a one-shot lead into the fourth round. It was Chinese New Year on the Saturday, and then Herbert won, of course, on Australia Day, so he was obviously celebrating maybe long into the evening. Final round 77 for Ashin Wu, double bogeyed 10, back 9 of 42. We were talking before we started to record, James, and you thought that if you could get through the first nine, certainly holes 4 to 9, and still be in position, you would have a good chance of winning this event because you've got par 5 on the 10th, the 13th, and the 18th.
Yeah, back nine.
Didn't happen for
him. Look, that was a strange double on 10, you know, which was a pretty birdieable hole that day. But last group, it can sometimes just kind of get away from you. It's like quicksand, you know, you make one mistake and then suddenly that hole just seems very small. Fairways seem very small and you're just almost like trying too hard. After a couple of mistakes, just maybe started pushing a little bit too hard on that back nine in the wind.
I guess, Michael, if you're Ashin Wu, you're seeing the wind get up and you're waiting to tee off and you're seeing one or two players post some good scores, but those that have just got out in front of you struggle from the off, gets in your head a little bit.
100% right. I think, you know, James has called it as well. It was very strange, that double that he made in 10. Look, it's pressure, isn't it? You know, different people react in different ways to it. But for, what would it be, the best part of 60, 65 holes, he was your champion. And then all of a sudden, it just kind of collapsed. So he will be feeling it this morning, no question about that. But yeah, just a really, really strange back nine. You know, did you say it was 42 shots,
yeah,
something like that? Really, really odd. And when he'd made the turn, I didn't see it coming out. I was more or less certain that unless Christian could post the number, then he was going to walk away with it.
Bryson DeChambeau, of course, was the defending champion. Just two shots back going into round four. He finished eighth in the end, Michael. He bogeyed the last four holes. He got himself in good position. I think he was favourite with the bookmakers late on day four. But he just fell apart a little bit, didn't he? I mean, that was one of the biggest surprises for me yesterday.
I could talk all day about Bryson DeChambeau and his quirks, his idiosyncrasies. Look, quality player, quite clearly. He's destined to win many, many times before his career's up. But he's getting a bit of a reputation as well as for being a slow player, for not really being much of a closer. And I know that there was the incident on 10 yesterday when the rules official told him that he'd been given a bad time and one more and he'd face sanctions under the European Tour's, I have to say, excellent new slow play policy. He then had a really long conversation with his caddy about club selection on 14. And then it all seemed to go to pieces. 15, 16, 17, 18, bogeyed all four and ended up losing, missing out in the playoff by four shots. So I wonder, you know, to what degree did having to speed up, you know, change the way that Bryson is used to closing out tournaments? Did he feel like he was, you know, purposefully trying to play faster? Did that put him out of the rhythm that he's more accustomed to?
He's obviously had to deal with that over the last, what, 9 months, a year, that whole slow play thing. I think he has dealt with the whole thing quite well because he come under a lot of stick from a lot of players, and that can't be very nice. But he's obviously had to work at that. But I remember when I first turned pro and a referee came up to me and said I was slow, and I was like, oh, blimey. I thought I was like being naughty at school, do you know what I mean? And I was like proper panic stations, and I got way out of kilter because I was a slow player when I was an amateur. Turned pro and it was like, I felt like I was running around. And I had to adapt, and I would consider myself one of the quicker players now. But it's quite hard to get used to because obviously you've had so many good results playing a certain way, and so you instinctively think, that's how I do things. Like, I'm methodical and I'm doing this and this is why I'm good.
How long did it take you to change?
I reckon it probably took maybe like 6 months, something like that. I mean, talking like 14 years ago now. I don't know if you guys experience any golf dreams, right? But I have these pretty horrible golf dreams, about 6 or 7 of them. And one of them is like revolving around a referee watching me with his stopwatch or whatever and trying to put the ball on the tee. And it keeps on falling off, and I'm like looking at this. I'm like looking at this referee, and I'm like, I'm trying to put the ball on the tee. Okay, I'll just hit off the deck.
Is this a recurring dream?
There's like 5 or 6 of them. Honestly, you don't want to go in there. And so I'm trying to put this tee on, ball on the tee, and it's fallen off. And then it's going into a divot, and I've got 250 carry, and I've got driver out of a divot, and this referee is like, and I'm like, I just can't get purchase. Yeah, and I can't get purchase on it. So it's like that whole slow play thing has obviously affected me more deeply than I thought. But, you know, getting back to Michael's point, I think that even though he made birdie on 13...
That's when he went favourite.
Yeah, even though he made... I think they had a chat on 10. It's probably a little bit unsettling. You know, he's probably learned to deal with that because he's obviously been slow for a while and dealing with whatever. But my opinion, what happened to DeChambeau, he was poorly, wasn't he? He was battling a bug. And I think when you're a player like Bryson DeChambeau and you're coming over to Dubai, he's a PGA Tour player, he's coming over to Dubai, he wants to win. Now, Tiger's the epitome of wanting to win, but he will grind every single shot out of every single round he's ever played in his life. Whereas maybe someone like Bryson, maybe he went bogey on 15, 16 and thought,
turns it in a bit.
I just like, I'm not going to win. I'm not saying that's the case, but I'm just thinking he's probably coming over here and he wants to win. And when he's maybe not going to do that, it's maybe just like, I'll chuck a couple
of just very quickly before we move on to Bryson's swing. Has he, Michael and James, has Bryson speeded up a little bit, do you think? Because in interviews he's saying that he has.
Well, I'm sure the PGA Tour referees will be able
that's
to
a jury,
us...
That's a jury yeah, still exactly. out for you. Michael, what do you reckon?
Yeah, jury's out for me.
Okay.
I'm not convinced.
Speaking of the jury, what do we make of this swing then? Because the European Tour put, I don't know, 5 or 6 of his tee shots together, and I'm far from being an expert, but he looks like he finishes completely off balance. He's putting everything into it. It doesn't look the most repeatable to me, and that's what people tell me you have to have. I mean, is this good for him, do you think, James? He's getting the distance.
I don't think he would undertake a physical change without him going through all the reasons why. Fought and against, and I think there'll be more reasons for.
So in the future, this will work for him?
Yeah, I believe so.
You know, I'm a little bit conflicted because I think that off the tee, yeah, he definitely looks out of balance to me. But it was more so around the greens as much as anything else that I thought that his, you know, very stiff, straight arm technique just doesn't really work. You know, I don't know. I mean, he's the guy with the tour card, not me. But I kind of feel like those, you know, delicate little chip shots, you know, from the rough, You need a little bit more wrist hinge, and he plays without any, so I'm not convinced that he's getting full control on the ball. He looks very rigid and stiff, and, yeah, you know, there was a thing a few years back with Ricky Fowler, and he was really flat with his swing, and people said that he would eventually have to change, and he was quite adamant that he wouldn't. Lo and behold, his swing is now completely different, and he has adapted. I'd like to think that Bryson, being a smart chap, will realise that he may need to make some tweaks here and there, certainly around the green. Off the tee, look, distance is one thing, but you've got to score. I've always maintained that the guys that hit the ball the furthest aren't necessarily the guys that are winning. There's a higher percentage, yes, but shorter players can and do still win. So
I agree with you that they can still win, but I just, if you can hit the ball a long way, you've got so much more advantage. And I hear what you're saying, but I'd take a guy hitting 9 out of a rough from 340 than a 4-iron or a hybrid or something coming in from 200? Because you've got to be maxing out your whole time. Like, Dustin Johnson can play his probably B or C game and still win a tournament because he just hits down the 340, whereas guys that are only hitting it sort of 280, 290, they've got to be maxing out their game in order to win a golf tournament. So I definitely hear what you're saying. And it's an interesting thing about Bryson's short game. I've never really noticed that before. I've actually quite enjoyed the kind of stiff wrist technique just because I think it's quite consistent. But
Bryson's action, his wrist action on the, around the greens, it's good to look at because it's so different to what any other player does. Is it the right technique? Is there such a thing as the right technique? I'm not sure.
In somewhere like Dubai, and obviously you find this in America, that rough was pretty thick last week, so you would actually probably encourage maybe a bit of a steeper angle of attack. And maybe Bryson doesn't kind of have that with his natural swing, a bit more shallow. But I guess, yeah, that could be a reason why around a course like Dubai, maybe his scrambling isn't quite as good.
Just one or two players that I want to mention before we move on. With conditions as they were yesterday, I expected more from Tommy Fleetwood and Eddie Pepperell because they are English. I just think, well, they should be good links players. And I was a bit disappointed with them. Is that fair? Should they have played a bit better given the conditions, or is that just me over-egging it?
Certainly Tommy, because he's just so good. And like every time he plays, you just expect him to play very well. And especially with his control, with his irons, with his driver, with his general game, he's just awesome. But, you know, and the tougher the conditions, you would expect Tommy to, you know, rise to that. But, you know, just one of those days. And Eddie, I guess, in that getting towards that stage where Tommy's at and that he's a natural kind of ball striker, changed his putting a little bit this week, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which I think has worked quite well. So, yes, you would, but look, a lot of good golfers missed the cut this week. So, you know, you can sometimes you turn up and you just don't play very well.
Eddie, as usual, was fairly active on Twitter over the course of the week. He says, and this was about Bryson DeChambeau, he says, "Fully understand if Bryson wants to keep hitting it 40 past me tomorrow so we don't have to chat. We actually got on quite well," he said, "after the round." And to his credit, he sped up a little bit. And then Matt Wallace has chipped in and said, "40?" I think suggesting maybe he's a little bit longer than that over Eddie. You mentioned that he's changed his putting grip using a claw grip. On day one, he says he was inspired a little bit by Lee Westwood. He suggested, "I was watching golf last Sunday. I couldn't believe how comfortable Lee looked on the short putts, especially. I thought I might as well give it a try." He said he'd been struggling with the greens, never been a good putter on tour, but for me, it's about not being a terrible putter. Didn't put particularly well on the last day. Conditions might have been a little tougher for him, but good to see Eddie back because he's not had the best time of things over the last couple of months, has he?
Yeah, he withdrew from a couple of events end of last year, didn't he?
Just he chucked a few in, didn't he?
Yeah.
He didn't complete for one reason or another.
Yeah, I think there was a hole in his bag and his balls fell out.
Apparently so, something like that.
Look, I haven't really had a proper conversation with Eddie Pepperell for about 5 or 6 years when he was on the Challenge Tour and I was on the Challenge Tour at the same sort of time, but he seems like the character that I would imagine would need to be stimulated in terms of, like, you know what I mean? He's obviously got quite high intellect and he's... you know, maybe sometimes he just kind of, golf doesn't quite get him. I don't know, maybe. And sometimes he might just go through stages where he's maybe just not as into it. But he will go through stages where he is and he'll perform incredible results like he did last year, the year before. So he is no doubt a very, very talented golfer, no question.
Good to see him feature on the leaderboard, even though he had a poor final day. Someone had a much better last day, Michael, is Bob McIntyre. Back after a wrist injury. When he pulled out last week, I thought, crikey, is this going to be one of these things where we keep seeing him in field lists like he's going to play and then there's going to be something wrong and he pulls out? But it looks like that he is fully fit and it's not an issue for him. He finished tied eighth in the end. He's going to be really pleased with that, isn't he?
Yeah, it certainly is. You know, first event of 2020 and first top 10. He's obviously trying to get into the top 50 to try and make it into the Masters by the end of March. I think he's got to do that. When I saw the news about Bob last week in Abu Dhabi, I texted his agent straight away and he replied saying, "Look, it's nothing major at all. This is purely a precaution. He feels okay, but he doesn't feel 100%. And Bob being Bob, he only wants to play when he's 100%. So, you know, that again is an example of the maturity that Bob's got. He's made a hell of a lot of really mature, smart decisions in his career up to this point. notably turning down an invite to play the Alfred Dunhill Links when he was he was about to turn professional. He turned that down to go and play the MENA Tour in Dubai, saying that, you know, he's played links golf all his life, but if he's going to play on tour, then he needs to play more tour-like courses. Exactly.
Sorry to cut you in there, Mike. Have you obviously covered his career for the last few years, like when he was an amateur in that?
Yeah. You know, I've followed Bob pretty closely for the last, I guess, 3 or 4, maybe even 5 years. And it's funny because there's been a lot of talk about other players that came through the Scottish ranks at that time. How can I best articulate this? Who maybe behaved more like tour professionals, but didn't necessarily play like it. But because
very politically correctly put there, Michael.
Yeah, you know, because they behaved like tour pros, they got a lot of attention. Bob has just always played golf, and he's played it the same way forever.
Yeah.
He's made some tweaks to the swing with his coach, David Burns. And it was as soon as he turned pro, I think people realised that, you know, actually we've got a real talent on our hands. Played so well in the Walker Cup shortly before he turned professional. I think I'm right in saying, was it Cameron Champ that he beat in LA, which was a real statement of intent.
Yeah.
And he's just taken the tour like a duck to water. Came straight up from the Challenge Tour, had that great year last year, and off to a flyer already this year. So I don't want to put pressure, but it's my job. So I expect big things from both this year. Certainly hope for them. And with any luck, that first win is not far away.
I covered the Challenge Tour event in Ireland at the end of 2018, just before he got his card. And he was featuring that event. So I saw a lot of his golf. And super impressed. I think the thing I was most impressed of, he was like so gritty. Do you know what I mean? He's just like, he was as gritty on the Thursday morning at kind of like level par 100, as gritty then as he was like coming down the stretch on the Sunday. Do you know what I mean? Which I always think is like a massive quality in a golfer, just grinding every single thing out of the round. Would you say that's the strength of his?
100% right. You know, and I think another strength that he's got is the environment that he comes from. He's very much a home bird. He lives in a small seaside town that's about 3 hours from anything in Scotland. So he's still a very humble lad. He's got no plans to move from Oban, as far as I know. He says he likes it there. The people there are great with him. I think that Bob he's making his way in the game the way that he thinks it's best going to work out for him. He's not doing what everyone else has done. He's not trying to follow someone else's plan. He's following his own path, and so far, so good. He's really exciting. He's given Scottish golf a bit of a shot in the arm because it's been a lean few years in terms of young talent.
There's a few good golfers got coming through.
Yeah, that's the thing. They all seem to have come through together in a quick, short burst.
Was it four Scottish golfers from Challenge Tour 2018? Was it four or not? Or was it three? Was it Grant, Bob McIntyre?
And David Law and Liam Johnson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, yeah, you guys have got a good crop going through. But that's great to hear about Bob. He seems like a really good guy.
Speaking of players who do things their own way, how impressed are we with Miguel Angel Jimenez, 56 years old, finished 16th in Dubai. 5 under over the weekend, I think, was the second best score for the Saturday, Sunday combined. When I see players go on to the Champions Tour, he won in Hawaii, didn't he, the other week? I would imagine that because the competition is different, certainly in America with the three rounds and it's not as good, your level might drop a little bit. He's popped back onto the main European tour and has been brilliant.
That is remarkable, isn't it? That's makes my comment a few minutes ago about hitting it a long way seem a bit silly. But there are exceptions, of course.
Indeed.
But he just controls his ball, though, doesn't he? And that's what he's always done. He's never been a big hitter, but he's always controlled his ball. He's like the best five-wood player on this earth. He knows his numbers, he putts well, he chips well. And at 56 years old, yeah, that's very impressive.
And finally, just to wrap it up for now, when it comes to the players that featured in this event or didn't feature, Michael, should we be concerned with Matt Wallace's form? I've got a note here that I've penned saying, Matt Wallace woes, not finished inside the top 40, last six events, hasn't won since September 2018. I think it's because, for me personally, I thought he sort of jumped above the sort of rank and file, and I considered him to be one that was knocking on the door of maybe even a major. I don't know. Michael, what are your thoughts about Matt Wallace at the moment? Just a bit of a blip.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Matt in the slightest. His rise was so meteoric and so fast that he eventually had to slow down a little bit. So, yeah, I'm not concerned. He's adjusting. You know, he split with his caddy sort of middle last year. So he's adjusting to having a new guy in his bag. He's got a new equipment deal. You know, I don't care what anyone says, that's an adjustment as well for any player to go through that. So, yeah, I'm not worried in the slightest. Matt's a class act, and, yeah, he'll be back. He'll be in the Ryder Cup team this year, I'm quite sure of it.
And one last thing on the Emirates. The average scores were very high. Obviously, the last day, that had something to do with the wind and the almost sandstorm conditions at certain sections of it. But the rough was toughened up. One or two tweets on the Tuesday and the Wednesday of players playing practice rounds saying, I've never seen Emirates like this. Do we think this was in response maybe to some senior players in world golf suggesting that the European Tour can be a little bit too easy and the courses need to be a bit tougher? Did we get that? Was it a better event because it was harder to play, James?
9 under par, winning total, I think's a really good winning total. Somewhere between 9 and 12, I think, is always good. Maybe not every week. Some weeks you do want to see a bit more of a shootout, but I love the fact that that course was playing tough.
74.7 was the average score in round 4, the highest final round in tournament history. One player that was just outside of the average was Sebastian Söderberg. On the final day, a 75. What was special? I'm sure many have read about this already. It was, apparently, officially, the fastest round in European Tour history at 97 minutes. This all happened because I think Sebastian and his brother, James Jasper, decided on the morning, look, this is doable. We're playing with a marker. Let's see if we can set a new low. And they literally sprinted round the golf course. I felt for Jasper looking at one or two of the pictures and videos today because he's got the bag, he's legging it. I mean, this is, I mean, just tell us, 97 minutes, how impressive is that?
Super impressive. I mean, Jesper, I know Sebastian and Jesper from a couple of years ago, they were on the Challenge Tour, and Jesper's only 25 now, he's a fit young thing. So let's not feel sorry for him. He's fine. And Sebastian's, maybe 27 or whatever. So they've got the fitness covered. I wonder at what point on Saturday afternoon or evening they thought, do you know what? Let's give this a rip.
Well, according to the pair of them, they talked about it sort of Saturday night and then sort of got up. And I think Sebastian said to his brother, look, this is more on you than me here because you've got the bag.
Yeah.
And I think, Michael, I'm presuming you read up on this story and seen the footage as well. It was a case of almost Jasper just saying, right, here's some clubs. I'm going to leg it to the neck where I think you're going to hit it, or leg it to the green if it's a par three. I mean, it was incredible, wasn't it?
It was absolutely brilliant. It was a good bit of fun, really, wasn't it? Good teamwork as well, I have to say. Jasper did his bit fantastically. It's not easy. It's mentally draining as much as anything else to run any kind of distance. I think an average round of golf, something like 5 miles. So let's say that's just under 10K. They've done just under 10K plus played 74 shots in 96 minutes. That's just absolutely incredible. So not just a bit of fun, but actually a heck of an athletic achievement as well. So fair play to them.
There is a suggestion that it's not a record. I mean, it is an official record, but we have found, courtesy of Peter Baker, who was tweeting about this, Peter Baker, former European Tour player, and Paul Way apparently went round in a quicker time in the Lancome Trophy back in 1990, and it was reported in the Liverpool Echo that they went round, I think, in 72 minutes. It's unofficial, so I don't know if they were timing themselves. You're looking at me, James, like, yeah, I don't really believe that.
Well, I've seen Peter and Paul in the more recent years, and I'm not sure.
They won't get around it now. Paul Way shot a 75. Peter Baker was a 77, finished last 64th. I mean, 72 minutes to take some going. And we believe that Mark Rowan and Rob Lee, Rob obviously of this parish, has gone round in a very, very fast time as well. What's the quickest you reckon you could get round then, James, if you were playing in competition on your own with a marker?
I wouldn't be touching that. Mate, I'd like to think I could do it in like 2 hours or something like that. Listen, if you lay down the challenge, I'm going to try and beat it.
Which caddy would you have on you? Would you have your regular caddy?
No.
Who's your regular caddy?
Well, my brother was my regular caddy. Now
could he deal with it? Could he deal with the pace?
Bless him. I don't think he could anymore. No offence, Mike. That's my brother, Mike. No, and then my most recent caddy, Charlie George, who's actually, he might be able to do it. I'd probably pick Charlie, and yeah. I reckon me and him could give it a go, yeah.
Who of the players, and caddies for that matter, Michael, do you think might be able to post a quicker time than Sebastian? Who's one of the fitter tour players, do you think, and who's got maybe a caddy that could get round to help him?
I'm going to say Martin Kaymer, now that he's got Craig Connolly back in the bag.
Do you think Craig could get round, do you think?
You know what to do is to make sure that you do it, say, 90 minutes before Celtic are due to kick off.
And then he'd definitely get round. Ah, oh dear. Well, that's tackling slow play, isn't it? There's no doubt about that. You can see some of the footage from Soderberg's final round at europeantour.com if you've not seen it already. It is something special. Incidentally, he broke the record set by Thomas Peters. And Thomas Peters was 119 minutes in Italy last year, and we can't quite find out if he actually was going for the record that day. It was just under 2 hours. He could have just been going out and thought, do you know what, I'll just be quick today. Yeah, and not actually going out to set a record.
Yeah, exactly. I think around the 2 hour mark, I'm just going to play pretty brisk. But when you start getting 90 something, you're like, you're making efforts to be able to break records.
Last week's selections from the trio that were on the Race to Dubai show, Robert Lee, Rhys Davies and Kit Alexander. Rhys, our co-presenter, went for Louis Oosthuizen, who was 23rd, and Sam Horsfield, who missed the cut, so that's a minus five. Kit went for Tommy Fleetwood, who was tied 11th, and Sean Norris, who was tied 56th. Did he start really well, Sean Norris? Was he first-round leader? That's 5 points anyway for Kit. And Robert went for Lee Westwood, who was tied 50th, and Jazz Janawatanan to miss the cut. So that's minus five. Presenters are on 15 points, co-presenters five, and guests on 45. Well, we'll be making our predictions for this week's event a little later. And you can make your own predictions each week by heading to europeantour.com to register for the Fantasy Race to Dubai game. The 2020 fantasy season will launch very soon. Other things to mention on europeantour.com, I'm sure some of you have seen these already, but if you haven't, well worth searching these out. We've got the brand new European Tour Challenge, lots of fun. Luck of the Draw is the title of the show. It's Beef versus Victor Hovland, drawing one of 14 clubs at random for each shot at the 18th at the Emirates course. And watch out for Beef's 107-yard 4-iron from rough over water onto the green. There's also a backseat Q&A with Martin Kaymer, and the latest player blog is with Sean Norris, who says he's only just starting to reach his golfing prime at 37 years old. Moving on to the PGA Tour, Mark Leishman posted a 7-under 65 to secure his fifth PGA Tour title. He won the Farmers Insurance Open at Torrey Pines. Overnight leader John Rahm saw four shots go in his first five holes, and despite a fine recovery, he finished one behind the Australian. James, he needed to eagle the last to get to a playoff, but he threw so many shots away early on. He was always chasing the Aussie, wasn't he?
Yeah, it's a bit unlike John. John's kind of turned into a bit of a kind of Terminator type. You know what I mean? Like, if he's in the lead, he normally cracks on. But, I mean, I don't stay up past 8.30 these days, so I only watch the first five holes.
So you thought he had no chance?
Yeah, exactly. I thought he had no chance. I kind of saw Rory didn't start off that great either. However, you know, Rory, he's like, similar as I was saying about Tiger at the start of the event, I always think Rory will grind it out and he will churn out those top fives. Even though he hasn't looked like he's in it, he'll suddenly be like, oh, top five at the end of the week. A bit of a strange one from John, but still gave it a go in the end. But Leish was just holding putts for fun, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think, did he rank last in strokes gained off the tee, but first in strokes gained putting? It was a similar event, Michael, to what we had on the European Tour, because it was those earlier starters that came good, not necessarily due to the conditions, just to the poor play of one or two of the final groups.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the way it finished up. I genuinely thought that John Rahm was probably going to see it through. He's a really good closer. Like James says, when he gets in front, he's pretty aggressive and, you know, pedal to the metal and all that stuff, and generally sees it out. But, you know, what can you do when Leishman's holding the kinds of putts that he was to be last off the tee in strokes gained and first in putting says it all, really. Unbelievable performance. And on Australia Day as well, what a weekend for Australians.
Word on Tiger Woods, he was just off the pace in the end. Difficult final day for him. He was told by caddy Joe LaCava, coming off the 18th green of the death of his friend Kobe Bryant, the legendary basketball player who was killed in a helicopter crash across the state in Calabasas. an awful lot of golfers paying tribute to Kobe Bryant. You obviously touched him. I think he was a real inspiration for a lot of players in America, and Tiger in particular.
Yeah, as he said, they were very good friends. I've actually listened to a few podcasts that Kobe was on, and like, you know, he really was just talk about his work ethic and what he did in basketball, and just, I mean, just really so sad at 41 years old, and his daughter as well, and everybody else that was in that helicopter. It's just a very sad event.
Yeah, thoughts with his family, certainly. Just back on Rory McIlroy, tied third. He would have gone back to world number one with a win at Torrey Pines. But I think if he finished solo second, he could have got to world number one this week if Brooks in Saudi had finished outside of the top eight, but it doesn't matter anymore because he was tied for third. Quick mention for Ben Taylor as well, a young English rookie on the PGA Tour who played well over the course of the first 3 days, just slipped a little over the last round and eventually finished in a tie for 55th in the end. But playing with such good players like that when you've come out of American college and you're new to the PGA Tour, I mean, he's going to get so much experience from that, isn't
it? Exactly. I mean, he's an Englishman on the PGA Tour. Not many British people, shall I say, have gone on and got a PGA Tour card. So good on him. This is just like the start. Okay, what are we, like probably 10 events through the season now, something like that, 8, 9, 10 events. So he's got a long way to go. Hopefully this will give him confidence. And he's a fellow Surrey Straub from the Surrey County Golf Union. So wish him the very best.
Yeah, we'll certainly keep an eye on his progress over the course of the year. Next up on the European Tour, we've got the Saudi International, powered by SoftBank Investment Advisors. We go to Royal Greens Golf and Country Club in the King Abdullah Economic City. Bit unusual because it's par 70. Don't play that many par 70s on tour. Probably don't play any, in fact. 7,010 yards, opened in 2018. How long does it take a course to sort of bed in, do you think, when it comes to tournament play? And I would imagine that this course is not played an awful lot over the course of the year.
No, I think you got that bang on. I wouldn't have thought they would have spared any expense for this golf course. So in terms of settling in, maybe not as long as others. I'd be interested to see the rough this week. I haven't seen any pictures or heard any kind of stories about what it's like. There wasn't much rough last year, hence the scoring, I think, was 19 under leader. Yep. So be interesting to see that. If there's more rough up, obviously it won't be as low, but I kind of expect it to be a similar sort of thing, a bit of a bomber's golf course.
150 kilometres north of Jeddah in Saudi Arabia. It's on the east coast of the Red Sea, obviously a very new event, according to the blurb here. Need to be thoughtful from the tee, in particular on the dogleg holes, which require precision placement. And the par 3 16th plays directly alongside the shore of the Red Sea. As James was mentioning there, Michael, potentially a bit of a bomber's course. When you look back at the players that did well last year, DJ, Haotung Lee, Bryson DeChambeau, of course, Scott Hend, who's big off the tee as well, Ryan Fox, Gavin Green, all sort of, you know, top 12, top 15. Potentially we should be looking for players who can hit it out there, which I guess is the same every single week. But Michael, what's your take on the course?
Yeah, kind of going back on what I said earlier on when I was saying about players not having to hit it that far. This is a course where evidently the ability to hit the ball prodigious distances is a huge advantage. And I think because of its setup, and the course design, dog legs must just feel like the greatest sight to a guy like DJ or Brooks, because they know they can take advantage of it, whereas some other players can't, and they can really just get it out there. So, yeah, you're looking at one of the longer guys winning this week, I think, for certain.
DJ, of course, playing again. He's got to be on the short list. I mean, we're talking about schedules, and I always think DJ's is quite interesting because he likes to come and play the Middle East events. He doesn't always play in some of the events we think he might play in the PGA Tour. But he's only got that one major. Sometimes I don't think he gets his schedule completely right, but he's such a fantastic player. What do we expect from him this week?
Don't want to let on, but he's actually my pick.
Oh, really? You can pick now, that's fine.
Well, he's my pick in terms of my free pick just because it's DJ. And I think he said about 4 weeks ago, I can't remember where he's playing, but he was like, I should have won more. And he's still won a decent
still won an awful lot, just
not the big ones. No.
Speaking of players who obviously prepare better than anyone else when it comes to the majors, or so it seems, Michael, that is Brooks Koepka, who played well to a point in Abu Dhabi, certainly the first round. Coming back from this knee injury, I think he stayed out in the Middle East, hasn't he? He was in Dubai, didn't play, but obviously he's got to be one on our shortlist.
He's on mine, believe it or not. He's my pick. That's incredible. You picked the two players that we were both going to go for, James and I. Yeah, it's simply down to his length as much as anything else off the tee. Brooks is the complete player. I love the way that he plays the game. He's so single-minded and He doesn't care about upsetting anyone or doing anything that people might think is a little bit odd. He just, you know, sticks to his own guns, and the results have demonstrated that's clearly the right way to do it for him. You know, it was a little bit concerning, the fact that he was out for that period of time with the knee injury. But you think back a couple of years ago, he missed the Masters with a wrist injury. There was legitimate concern that he had then that, you know, his career could even have been in jeopardy. Brooks is a guy that adapts very quickly to obstacles, and, you know, injuries that he's had, he overcomes them pretty quickly. Great strength of character and all the talent in the world. So, you know, he's number one for a reason, and that's why I'm picking him for this week.
Okay, I'm going to throw some other American names at you both. Give us your thoughts or not, depending on how you see their progress this week. The likes of Patrick Reed coming across to play. Phil Mickelson is playing this week as well. The Mexican Abraham Anser is also making his way from the PGA Tour to the European Tour. What sort of impact do we think that trio might have?
Patrick Reed will finish top five, in my opinion.
Okay.
Phil...
who knows?
Who knows? And Abraham Anser looks like a really good player. Whether or not he'll necessarily definitely feature someone like a kind of Johnson or a Patrick Reed, I haven't called Patrick Reed as a winner, but I just know he's going to turn up. Whereas Abraham Anser is probably good for maybe a top 20, top 25, in my opinion. So I think they're all kind of will play decently. Phil, obviously, we're not sure.
Okay. James, you've taken the American players. I'm actually going to give some Europeans to Michael. Sergio didn't cover himself in glory last year in Saudi. He is teeing it up again. Henrik Stenson also. Martin Kaymer, is he on the cusp of a return to the big time, maybe? And obviously, Hao Tong Lee, a Chinese player who's done well in the desert previously. What are your thoughts on that lot?
Yeah, Martin Kaymer certainly starting to turn the corner, but hasn't turned it just yet. I like the fact he's teamed up with the wee man again, and, you know, they've had two really good spells together previously. This is their third, and, you know, hopefully third time lucky for them once again. Hao Tong Lee, phenomenal talent, isn't he? He's a remarkable player. Stenson, just Mr. Consistent, really. Wouldn't be surprised to see him feature in the top 10. And Sergio, look, it's not going to happen again. Lightning's not going to strike twice. What happened last year was just unbelievably weird. Obviously, there was something else going on, whether it was in his private life or, you know, between his ears. Who knows what it was that was causing Sergio such grief and mental discomfort. But hopefully he's got that out of his system. There will be a lot of eyes on him this week. People keen to see just the way that he conducts himself and how he atones for his behaviour last year. But look, it's not going to happen again. And he's playing reasonably well. So, yeah, a top 10 finish for Sergio for me.
We should point out that Shane Lowry is also playing. What's his start to the year been like for you, James? He's sort of featured a little bit, but never been in contention with these events, has he?
Yeah, just kind of like a solid sort of start to the year, just kind of finding your feet. Probably took a good sort of 3, 4, 5 weeks off around Christmas just before. So some players come out starting out of the blocks. Personally, I never got going until May or June. Living in the UK, could never really find my rhythm. Always travelling like 10 hours to go play somewhere. I always struggle with that. I much preferred it when I was playing a lot of golf in the summer. So some guys, you know, play well at different times of the year.
Without revealing your second pick, Michael, anyone else that we should be looking out for this week? I mean, it's an excellent event. We've got Bernd Wiesberger playing. We've got Matt Wallace as well. Victor Perez and Poulter staying on. Rafa Cabrera-Bale, Bob McIntyre. It is a very good field. Who else do you think might be amongst those that will contend the event come Sunday afternoon?
You hit the nail on the head earlier on when you said about players that hit it some distances. You need to confirm it for me. If Adrie Arnaus is in the field,
he is playing.
Yeah, I think
he's my pick. You can't have him.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, look, he's had a lot of great finishes since he came up from the Challenge Tour. Really good season last season. You know what? Even though he faded pretty badly yesterday in Dubai, I like the look of Victor Perez as well. He's been so consistent, and now that he's just about in the Ryder Cup team, I think he'll really want to keep the foot down and try and lock up that place pretty early. So, yeah, I think that yesterday was maybe just a blip, and don't be surprised to see him in the mix.
Okay, sounds like you're changing from Koepka to Perez. However, let's get two picks then. One has to be outside the top 50 from the final 2019 Race to Dubai standings. Reminder, it's 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, minus 5 for a missed cut in our yearly challenge. James, give us your two to follow then.
My two picks are Ryan Fox, outside of the top 50.
Was he outside of the top 50?
He was outside of the top 50, I think it's 56. Yeah. So he's that pick, and DJ.
And DJ as well. Michael, you are obviously going for Brooks and...
You know what? I'm going to be a typical Scot and back one of our own. I'm going to go for Grant Forrest.
Any reason why?
Grant is just an awesome player. He was kind of in Bob's shadow a little bit last year. He's starting to ramp it up a bit. He's had a good start to 2020, played pretty well in Dubai. And he's a confidence player, Grant. Once he gets on a bit of a hot run, he might take a little while to warm up, but he eventually gets very, very hot. So that's where I think he's at just now. So, yeah, I'm looking for him. Is he going to win? I don't know. It's a hell of a field, but top 10, certainly.
Adrian Nous, as mentioned previously, is going to be my pick. Third in Dubai, played well in Saudi last year, hits it a long way, so I'm hopeful that Adri can come good. And my player from outside of the top 50 from last year, I'm going on this Australian theme. It's incredible, the Aussies that have won over the course of the last 5-6 weeks or so. We had Cam Smith in Hawaii, Mark Leishman, of course, at Torrey Pines, Adam Scott win on Australia on the European Tour, Wade Ormsby in Hong Kong, and Lucas Herbert last week. The new name on the trophy, from an Australian point of view, will be Minwoo Lee, who played well in Saudi last week. Didn't play in the desert event so far on the European Tour, but played well in South Africa. So he will be my choice for the player outside of the top 50. Just before we disappear, James, you say that you are winding down your career. What's your status at the moment? Are you still going to play, or is that it now?
Popping out a third kid come May, and okay, that'll be 3 under 4.
I see.
I've been otherwise engaged, but I've got a couple of jobs on the go. I work for a sports management company, okay, and work for our family business. And so it's that, together with the two kids and a third one coming, I'm very busy. But I play a little bit locally. I'm calling it a postponement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Two-time winner on the challenge. So, I mean, this is a decision that's how long in the making for you to...
Probably about 10 years. Maybe longer, but mid-2018, I had a bit of a back injury, and during that time I was off, I was just like, I'm just going to tap out, I think, for a bit, and tried playing a little bit last year, but truthfully, I just kind of love being at home with the old fam, and I'm working away on some other projects.
Okay, so you're not officially retired. Are you officially retiring on the show for us today or not, or do you think you are going to get back to playing?
No, it's a postponement. I'll never stop playing. I mean, I'm like, I played at the weekend with the boys, won a tenner. I love it. And every day I wake up, I still think I'm a golfer. But it's just the timing of my life. And listen, I wasn't playing the level of golf I wanted to play at. So all of this sort of stuff was just kind of made up to be like, right, I'm just going to go down a little...
If you wanted to get back in, what would the route be back in for you now? How would you do it? You'd get in a few events anyway because of the challenge.
I think I probably would... Yeah, exactly. I'd probably cross that bridge when we came to it, but I'd... Listen, this is not for another couple of years. I'm not getting any sleep. I'm not really having a life for another couple of years until the kids are older and stuff. So if I wanted to get back into it, I'll just kind of start out small, play some local stuff. If I felt like my game was there and start playing the golf I played because I, you know, when I was a kid or when I was an amateur and stuff, like, you're playing the game because, like, you love it and you're playing it for the right reasons. Whereas truthfully, the last 8 years I've been playing golf like this. It's average golf, just settling for average. So, yeah.
Well, I've enjoyed your company today. Thanks for popping in. That is your lot for now. Next week, we'll review the Saudi International, powered by SoftBank Investment Advisors, and we'll look ahead to the ISPS Handewitt Open. Until then, you can stay up to date with the latest news from the European Tour via the official website and app, as well as on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. But for now, from James Heath. James, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Goodbye.
And from Michael McCune, it is goodbye, Mike. Thanks.
Goodbye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We will see you soon.